Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, you just heard Chris Miller say that we have tied a record, 94 degrees, and we've got a couple of hours to go to maybe break that record. What can we do to make the record, to break the record? All right, if you've got air conditioning in your home or your business, make sure the doors are closed. Don't let that air out. And rev those engines. Let's get those cars driving around there. Let's do what we can to just make it hotter. Is there a place to start like a safe fire somewhere? Or we can just add it. Let's just go ahead and go for it. Let's get together and break that record. Look, there's a lot of records I'd like to break, but that's not one of them. It's Thursday, and Thursday night football tonight, the Panthers and the Bucks, so another team in the NFC South is going to lose. I wish they both could, but they can't, and everybody lost last week except the Saints. And the Saints are heading west to take on the Rams on Sunday, and then they'll stay on the West Coast and take on the Seattle Seahawks the following weekend. Two tough games on the road for the Saints. We had a story on our website, WWL.com, about Popeyes and a new campaign. It's BYOB, not bring your own bottle. BYOB, bring your own bun. This is a really interesting promotion because they're asking you to bring your own bun and condiments. What they're giving you, basically they're giving you three chicken tenders and telling you to make a sandwich yourself. I mean, that's kind of cool because that's all that chicken sandwich was, that famous chicken sandwich, right? From Popeyes, it was basically three chicken tenders. Isn't that what it was? Anyway, I think that's very... very creative. Hey, if you're just tuning in this afternoon, yeah, it's hot, we know. We've been talking about the NOPD talking today about curbing teen crime. And it's a shame that that is such a big problem, but it is a huge problem. We've also been talking about giving ex-cons a second chance. And if some people go to prison, and I have some more ex-felons on the phone, because I asked if anybody's an ex-felon, you want to call the show, I'd love to talk to you. And isn't it nice to know that there are so many ex-felons listening to our show? But what I'm pointing out is that a lot of people who made a mistake, they're not proud of that mistake. They don't want to go back. They want a second chance. And when somebody says they're a convicted felon and they have to put that on an application, sometimes they're just booted out. And so as a society, what do we expect of somebody coming out of prison if we don't give them a second chance? Here's a text that says, very apropos of this topic today because we get to listen to 10 criminals speak on the national stage tonight on television. Now, see, that's a reference to the Democratic debate tonight on ABC. I'll watch. It'll be a fun free-for-all Friday. We'll have some highlights from the Democratic debate. But that's ridiculous. I mean, I'm looking at the names of everybody who's debating tonight. And these are not 10 criminals on that stage. I mean, maybe seven. From Laplace, Jay, you're on WWL.
Hey, Scoot, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I was just calling. I'm ex-convict, felon. I haven't had an issue getting a job. I believe it. You don't. If you have problems getting a job, it's on you. You're probably going into an interview acting like a convict. You got to go in wanting the job and wanting to work hard. You work hard, you'll excel. I've had several jobs, moved up the ladder. Really, the only thing that I've had that affected me is not being able to have a gun. And for your previous caller, you can go hunting. You just got to bow hunt.
Hmm. Well, you know, that's interesting. So, Jay, I don't need to know what you did, but you made a mistake, and obviously you didn't want to repeat the mistake, so when you got out, you needed a second chance.
Yeah, and it wasn't a violent crime, too. It was armed robbery. So, I mean, it's all in your attitude. If you want to take advantage of an opportunity, you will get it, but you can't go in with a convict frame of mind.
Well, Jay, it seems like, though, when some people just have to put that on their application, that automatically works against them and they're automatically judged. That doesn't happen?
Oh, don't get me wrong. Yeah, yeah, they're gonna look at you funny, but once you get in there and present yourself like you want to work hard, and then show them you will work hard, yeah, that just goes on the back burner. Nobody cares.
I mean, you don't say things like, you know, I went to prison for armed robbery, and if you don't hire me, I'm going to, you know, rob you.
No, I mean, you go in there, you try to speak your best English. I'm not the most eloquent person, but I try to put forth a presentable, you know, atmosphere.
Well, that's really good to hear. That's good to hear. Jay, I appreciate the call. Glad you shared that with us. Here's a text that says he sounds white, so I guess he doesn't have a problem getting a job. Welcome to America. You know, I did think about that in talking to him. I don't know if he's white, but if he is white, this made me excuse me, think about the possibility that if you are black and an ex-felon, does that make it less likely for you to get a job? And if that's the case, this is what we talk about when we talk about him still being alive. Because an ex-convict, white or black, should be treated exactly the same. Because every black person's not linked together. Every white person's not linked together. So it's truly unfair. But that is certainly a possibility. Hey, from the North Shore, Ed, welcome to WWL.
Good afternoon, Scoot. How are we doing?
I'm good.
I'm going to take you off my Bluetooth so you can hear me a lot better.
Okay.
We met a couple of years ago, three to be exact, at the Veterans Festival on the North Shore.
Okay.
And I told you about a project that we were trying to initiate. Well, we got it going. It is a nonprofit organization. We deal specifically with veterans that are having transitional issues, problems, need of housing, and we also work with veterans that come out of incarceration.
And Ed, what's the name of the program?
It's Camp Nora, N-O-R-A.
I remember talking to you about that.
Yes, sir. It stands for No One Rides Alone. It's a 13-bedroom house, because here's one of the issues. A veteran makes decisions based on their training or survival. And especially when you look at Vietnam vets, and we got to be looking even more so at female vets because of their positions now in combat areas, that when they come home, they don't want to admit they have a problem. They don't want to admit they have an issue. So some of them will not ask for help, find themselves in challenging situations. Some of them will reach out to self-medicate. Next thing you know, they're being incarcerated. What they need, Scoot, is not a handout, but a hand up to help them realize what brought them to the position to make those decisions.
Right.
Not just discipline them because they made a mistake. Let's find out why they made it.
Ed, where does the funding come from Camp Nora?
We are strictly 100% nonprofit. We do fundraisers. We take donations. Right now, we're in dire need of a grant writer because we have no outside government funding that's coming in at all. So it's a challenge, but we've been in existence now for 2.5 years. We've actually had 18 veterans go through our program. Some we were able to help. Some they decided that they didn't want it, which we can only help those who want to help themselves.
Of course.
But now let me give you a little bug, and you're going to get the scoot on this.
Okay.
I just finished a 48-state motorcycle ride where I took a motorcycle and I went to state capitol to bring awareness to veterans homelessness and veteran suicide. While I was on the road, I found out there's a lot of programs out there similar to what we're doing that's trying to help these vets, 50,000 plus every night on the street that are homeless, that are making the wrong decisions, some of them being incarcerated, some of them needing help. So we're going to reach out to the federal government, and we're going to ask them to take a closed military installation and make it a national homeless veterans shelter, to where veterans from all over the country that need that assistance to keep them from making the bad decision, to get the guidance, to help them find where their issues are so they can address them and get back on the right track, will have a location where they can go and at the same time have a place to live, which is what we're trying to get people to understand. If a veteran comes out of incarceration, it's great. We're trying to find them jobs. We're trying to give them this, but where are they going to live in the meantime? Where are they going to live until they get that first job? Yeah. That's where we come in. That's what we try to help them do. Get them a place to stay with us. We do have requirements for a veteran to be on our property, as far as what it's all about structure. And that's what these people need. When they got out of the military, they made a lot of bad decisions because structure was no longer in their life. Now they have to learn to take that structure and put it towards their productive way. And coming out of incarceration, that structure's been pretty much put back into it. So now let's guide them.
Ed, send me an email. It's scoot@wwl.com. Send me an email and let's stay in touch. And if you ever have any kind of a fundraiser, we'll certainly talk about promoting that on the show. And I would hope
We got a golf tournament next Friday on the 20th.
All right. Well, go ahead. Listen. Send me an email on that, and we'll promote it on the show. I really hope this national homeless veterans facility works out, because if there is an empty facility somewhere, why not put it to use? And I hope that gets bipartisan support.
And that's what I'm hoping, sir. And we're starting to put the package together now, so we can start pushing it to the right people, and let's get this thing in a productive manner, and let's get these veterans off the street.
All right. When you went to every state capital, you went to all these different state capitals, were you ever surprised that, like Nevada, for example? I mean, you thought, Nevada, well, I'm either going to go to Vegas or Reno. I mean, did you really think you'd end up in Carson City?
Actually, I went to both.
Okay.
I wound up in Vegas. I had a mechanical problem on the bike. So I wound up going to the Harley-Davidson dealership in Vegas. They were going to fix it for me, and then from there I went to Phoenix.
Because so many states have rather obscure capitals, like Oregon. You want to go to Portland? No, you go to Salem.
Exactly. But the thing of it is, some of the state capitals, I went to one, I couldn't find it because it looked like an office building.
Wow.
But then I had some that were just miniature White Houses. I mean, they're all... Many of them look like they had basically the same diagram with the gold dome on the top and a statue. But, there were a few of them that were just unbelievable. You see a lot of pride in the Capitol. And then it was a few of them. It was like, really?
Listen, Ed, I appreciate the call. And really, send me an email and we will stay in touch. So there is a list now of the happiest states. Got a list of the top 20 here. You think Louisiana's in the top 20? Think Mississippi's in the top 20? Are we happy here? And what state is the happiest state? You know what? I look at this list. I am not surprised at which state is number one. I don't think you'll be surprised either. We'll talk about that. Get to more of your calls when we come back. I'm Scoot in the Afternoon, and this is WWL. All right, so what is the happiest state in the country according to a new survey? I got the list of the top 20 here. Here's a text that says, Scoot, I bet it's Colorado. That's from Danny in La Place. And we didn't say the highest state. But you know what? I mean, people who smoke pot, a lot of people who smoke pot are really happy. So, that's a good guess. Actually, on a list of the top 20, Colorado was number 19. Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, not even in the top 20. Wow. I have fun in Louisiana. I've had fun in Mississippi. I've had fun in Alabama. I should have a record in Alabama, but I don't. That's a story for another program. The number one happiest state in America is Hawaii. And I know that's a shock to some of you that didn't realize it was a state. Derek, you're on WWL. Good afternoon.
Hey, they had a loud truck pass. Okay, there we go. Hey, Scoot, first of all, I just want to commend you on, both you and Seth, on your radio shows. Y'all do a fantastic job.
Thanks.
I don't think your listeners know how difficult the job can be at times, because if you don't have a high volume of callers, you've got to burst into a spontaneous soliloquy of whatever the subject is, and you guys do a good job with that. So
I appreciate you noticing that, because there are times, you know, I mean, there are times in every show where you don't, you know, you might not have calls. It's very, very rare on this show, but there are a few times when you don't have calls. I love getting texts. Why don't you shut up and take a call? And I feel like texting back, because I don't have any right now, and I have no choice but to talk.
Well, I have an interesting insight in that. I was a talk show host on a sports show called Sports Furrier on WBOK when they had previous ownership. So when we first started, we didn't have hardly any listeners at all. So I would do a lot of talking by myself. I am a proud ex-con, and I say proud in that I was able to, with God's grace, make something of my life. But it wasn't for many hiccups along the way. But I went on to own a restaurant in the French Quarter. It was the Orleans Cafe. It was there from 98 to 2008. And I made it a point, because coming from an ex-con background, I made it a point to hire ex-cons whenever I could, because I knew how difficult it was to get a job. Let's face it, if an employer is looking and reading an application, they see, yes, I'm a convicted felon. I mean, it's almost a joke. I mean, of course they're not going to seriously consider you, for the most part. I shouldn't say everybody, but... anyway, when I was, I had a lot of difficulties with substance abuse. Thank God I've been clean 6 years now, and I've got a wife, children, a nice place to live in Lakeview. And I've got a nonprofit that helps kids, so we do real well now. But not, this wasn't before 45 years of madness. But anyway, because of my restaurant experience, when I went into work release, and then that's exclusively what I've done all my life, I didn't have the job skills to be able to get a good job in work release programs. So I would have to take the low man on the totem pole job, like janitor and stuff like that. And I was the best janitor I could be, and gave 100% effort, and, you know, everything was as clean as it could possibly be. But an interesting opportunity came up in a small town called Vidalia across the bridge from Natchez, where the only fine dining restaurant in town was looking for a general manager. So I didn't think they would seriously consider me, being how I was in jail. But they did, and the owner came up there and interviewed me, and he thought I would be perfect. So all of a sudden, I had 43 employees that their boss was being dropped off in a sheriff's office van every day and picked up by the sheriff's office van.
Wow.
And some of these, yeah. And some of these employees had a resentment for that, because now I'm in a position of authority over them. And some of them have been working there 20, 30 years. And, you know, they really kind of were taking advantage of the owner, and that's what he wanted, somebody that was in there that, you know, hold the bottom line. And I did, and it grew to a point where a small fraction of the employees, I was able to increase business. I'm, you know, I like experience in marketing, so I was able to, you know, get a lot of more people in there, a lot of people crossing the bridge from Natchez to come and eat. So revenue was up, and things were going well. I married the football coach there. He's the fourth winningest coach all time in Louisiana, Dee Faircloth. I married his daughter that worked at the bank. She opened up my bank account up there. I remember her. I was a dad to our kids. And then people were hating on me. So they started calling my probation officer. Now it's a real small town up there. So they called my probation officer and said that I was trying to sell drugs there. I was in the bathroom getting high, and I was doing none of that. I was clean. So they came and raided our house, and they found an empty bag of marijuana that had a little dust at the bottom that was in the back of my wife's jewelry box. And, of course, she's got a sensitive position at the bank, so I tried to do the admirable thing and take responsibility for it so she wouldn't get in trouble. And they slammed me. They gave me 120 days in jail. And when I got out, they escorted me to the parish line. So it's just a weird situation in small towns. So I just wanted to share that insight and let people know that the sky is the limit for people that are getting out of jail. If you just work hard, do the right thing, and there are people out there that are sensitive to their situation and do want to help if they can, and you would be surprised how many people that are doing the hiring have actually been in trouble themselves.
Derek, I love your story, and I appreciate you sharing that with us.
All right. Well, thank you, Scoot.
Man, and thanks for the hope. By the way, if you haven't noticed, we've made some changes here at WWL. There's now more talk and few interruptions. I'm Scoot. Glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. You know, what happened to Derek happens to people. There is, and if you work hard, if you have a strong work ethic, if you are committed to doing a really good job, even though you're not perfect, there are people who will resent you. And they took advantage of the fact that Derek was an ex-con. But you don't have to be an ex-con to be resented in the workplace. Because there are people who do not want you to work hard. I experience this a lot. They don't want you to work hard because they don't want you to make them look bad. Because they're not willing to work as hard as you. And you make them look bad by taking the extra effort and by doing more. And it is a human jealousy that exists in the workplace. And, I'll tell you, it is exaggerated in New Orleans. I'm from here, but I've lived elsewhere. I'm back, and I'm not afraid to be honest about the city. And I'm not afraid to be honest about the things that should change. And this mentality of laissez-faire attitudes, this mentality of, this is the way we do it. No, not acceptable. You do the best you can in your position. And that is going to cause people to resent you and hate you. And when they do, you accept that as the ultimate compliment. Because if there are people who don't like me because I work hard, I take that as just the best compliment ever. From Homa, Byron, you're on WWL.
Oh, finally. I didn't think I was ever going to get on.
You're on.
All the people that called in that was from prison and came out, talked positive about their experiences, that they all gained something because they worked for it. Every single one of them, except the last guy, he got from other people, that not the company. When the United Way and all talked about $10 an hour, you know, $10 an hour is not a living wage. It's an entry wage. It would provide you a home, an apartment, maybe not in the best parts of town. But at that point, you can at least gain a step forward. Did you know in North Carolina, the last election, a couple of days ago, one of the counties in there, 33% of the county was black, and they actually went for the Republican Party. And it sounds like to me that black people are starting to realize that the Democrats just want to give them crumbs, where the Republicans want to give them an advance. Not an advance, not to say that you're going to get something for nothing. We're going to give you an opportunity to work. When are y'all going to realize that we want all people to work? I don't care what color you are, living next door to me, whatever. They talked about their kids growing up. Y'all talked about it in a way, and the parents not taking care of them.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, when they come out of prison, they say, we had discipline. We were disciplined. The problem with it is that nobody's disciplined their kids. No matter what color you are, you have to discipline your kids. When you go to school, when they're little kids, and the parents are going to fuss at the teacher for discipline and try to get them kicked off, try to get them whatever you want to say, killed or whatever, threatening their lives, how the heck are you going to run a society like that?
Yeah, it's a problem we talk about often.
But we need discipline back in our country. That's the only way that we're ever going to straighten out.
There needs to be a consequence for negative behaviors. It's that simple. Yeah, you're right.
It's very simple. And the problem is we're giving excuses for people that are not disciplined, not above, not from their own fault, from their parents' fault, and they bring in the same system that they And society said, well, we can't discipline the parents for the kids' fault.
Yeah, in some cases, parents need to be disciplined. You know, in some cases, there's just a bad kid. And I don't know what the formula is because I'm not an expert in criminal justice, but there should be a better way to do a better job of holding parents accountable. Byron, you know, when you make these arguments, here's a suggestion I want to give you. Stop referring to that part of the population as the black people. You know, that's just the black people. I mean, don't say it that way.
Wait, no, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
And when I talked to you, the caller, I said black, and I'm not saying black. It could be Hispanic. It could be white. I don't care.
Well, it's just that, you know, when somebody says, you know, the white, if a black says the white people, and if a white person says the black people, it's such a dividing phrase.
No. What terminology am I supposed to say about people?
Well, Byron, look, you're an adult. It's not for me to figure that out for you. You go figure that out for yourself, okay?
No, tell me the terminology.
Well, if you would have said black people, or if you would have said the black community, but the way you said the black people, I'm sorry, but it was offensive to me.
The black people that were calling me, was actually agreeing with everything I was saying.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with much of what you're saying. And we've had blacks call this show all day today saying the exact same thing. I'm just suggesting that you just take a look at yourself and instead of saying the black people, just say, you know, blacks.
Honestly, God, truth, and I believe in God. I know you I don't know where you're at on that, but it doesn't matter. But anyway, I have a friend. That was when he was 13 years old. Somebody stole his baseball. Can I say what race he was? It doesn't matter.
It shouldn't matter.
But hit his head, busting him in the head, and killed him. Went home with his baseball. Okay? So this is how close I am to it. I'm not far out there on everything.
Look, Byron, I'm not disagreeing with everything you're saying. I've got to get to a break here, but it just I like to address attitude sometimes, and this is my opinion.
Providing for his family now.
All right. There's a lot of tragedies out there, and then you know the white people. Well, you know they're the serial killers, right? The white people. See, that's why that just kind of strikes me in the wrong way. All right, you want a pair of tickets to go see LSU take on Northwestern State in Baton Rouge Tiger Stadium this weekend, this Saturday? And you're also going to be part of the ultimate tailgate experience, compliments of LSU Sports Properties. If you are the eighth caller to our contest line right now, 260-WINS, area code 504-260-9467, you win from Tiger Radio, WWL. The Beatles came to America in February of 1964. By September 12th, 1964, the same year, the Animals had arrived in America, and they were the antithesis of the Beatles. The Stones, the Animals, these were the bad boys. The Beatles at the time were the good boys. On this day in 1964, this was the number one song in America. But to show the great diversity in America, we're going to play the number two song on the charts on this day in 1964 going into this next break. I'm Scoot. Glad you're with us. It is a Thursday afternoon. Tomorrow it is Free for All Friday on our show. And we want to congratulate Juan Barrera. He has just won a pair of tickets to the LSU Northwestern State game and the tailgate experience this Saturday. Listen for your chance to win home game tickets every Thursday from 1 to 4 here on WWL. Go Tigers from LSU. Look, you know, I got a text here that says, you know, I might have gone overboard with the whole thing about, you know, correcting the guy about the black people. And maybe so. I'm not going to turn that into a whole show. I'm not making a big deal about that. It seems to me that was just such a separating way to say it. But again, I'm not opening. If you think I'm too sensitive on that, it's okay. You know, nobody's perfect. I just reacted the way that I've reacted. And it's just when I hear things said a certain way, it reminds me that, well, you know, maybe it's not so much that it's offensive as much as it really is the reflection of the things that have been such a tradition in this country for so long. So, you know, I try to bring it to attention. But, look, it doesn't mean that everybody is going to agree. You know, I really wanted to talk about vaping today, and we didn't get to it. Maybe we'll get to it tomorrow. But do you really think that all these warnings about vaping deaths are going to change people's minds? I mean, maybe some people, yeah. But people were warned about smoking cigarettes, and they continue to smoke. And remember in the beginning? I mean, when I was young, when baby boomers were young, you know what we were told? Smoking cigarettes will stunt your growth. What the hell was that about? Well, I didn't smoke, but something stunted my growth because I didn't turn out to be that big of a guy. I don't know if it's going to help. It's like sometimes people know they're doing something dangerous, but they do it anyway. And one young teenager, and this is sad, one young teenager, well, I don't know how young he is, but a young person, according to doctors, because this guy's been vaping, this young person has the lungs of a 70-year-old man. So the point is, vaping ain't good for you. And sometimes something catches on. It's like this new cool trend, this new cool thing to do. And we don't know enough about it. And it turns out to be a negative thing. So, man, look, if this is a dangerous thing, then don't do it. And I hope people stop. But there's a tradition here that just because you warn of something being bad for you, doesn't mean that people are going to stop. I mean, when I see people vaping, I mean, is it just me or don't you see so much smoke that, I mean, you feel like you're at a Foghat concert in like 1978, you know, with the fog machines going. I mean, these people look like they're a walking fog machine from a rock concert back in the 70s. All right, here was the number two song on the charts on this day in 1964. Supremes, they were huge. And this is an age-old question. Baby, baby, where did our love go? We could do a show on that question. Sometimes it's fun to go back and think about the year the Beatles dominated, the other people that dominated that year as well. And this song was number two on this day in 64. I'm Scoot. We'll be right back on WWL. On this day in 1966, The Monkees premiered on NBC. They were huge. When they hit the charts, they had one hit after another. And I remember as a kid growing up in Metairie, I think I remember this show coming on at 6:30 on Monday nights on Channel 6 here locally. But I don't know. Maybe my memory is... of course, that was before I started killing brain cells, so I was probably pretty accurate back then. But 1966, Monkees hit television. Here's a text that says, damn, I got to tell you, Scoot, for someone who got robbed and ran over by racist blacks, you sure take up for them. Well, first of all, I don't know if the people who robbed me were racist. I don't know that the person who hit me with a motorcycle was racist. Sometimes racism is not the motive. Sometimes it's opportunity. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I refuse to this day to pass judgment on all blacks based on the behavior of some. And I hope that people don't pass judgment on me for the behavior and the attitudes of some whites. Sports Talk, Christian Garrick, live from Hooters on Veterans Highway with the American Bank and Trust Player Show with Justin Hardy. Coming up next, I want to thank Diane Newman, Todd Manessis, our studio producer, Ian Hoke, and thank you for...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.